good? Is it working? Because at Michigan, they said it didn't work, but they didn't tell anybody until it was over.
And that's usually what I do.
Well, I brought my board with me today, but it's not to hit anybody if you fall asleep. It's just one of my knees doesn't work, and this makes it a lot easier to stand here. So if I look down, you see me moving something with my feet. I'm just repositioning that board occasionally. Well, it's indeed a joy to be here in New York at your beautiful local. We've never been here before. If you don't know us, I'm Martin Addy. That's my wife, Janine, in the green coat. We're from Springfield, Missouri. Originally, I'm from the Wisconsin area, and my parents moved to Houston, Missouri in 1978. And then we were married in 1981. It was 29 years ago, a couple of weeks back. We celebrated our anniversary while we were on the road because we left home over 2 weeks ago. I have several thoughts to offer to you today. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. I don't know if you've seen my name probably on the CCEG asking for prayer requests, and some of you may have heard my name years ago because I have some disabilities that were a great worry to my parents when I was a child, and my younger brother does also. And there's been lots of prayers offered up for me and my family over the years, and a lot of them have been answered. There have been so many answers to prayer that if I was to try to stand here and tell you all the blessings that we've received, it'd probably be time for your reunion to start. And so I'll just try to keep that testimony a little shorter, and I'll probably intersperse a few other things here. Part of my main sermon idea that I'm going to start out with today is I want to talk about pollution. And you may not think that has a whole lot to do with church, but I'm going to make a point here that's going to be, you'll see where I'm getting at. Because pollution is like sin. It messes up everything that it touches. It's tangible. Like the oil that's washing up on the beaches from the oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. You can see it and its effects. The sand is dirty. The water's contaminated. It has far-reaching consequences on everyone that's near it. The fishermen are out of work. Their families are hungry. The environment is suffering. The oil is damaging the ecosystems that the wildlife live in. Birds can't fly when their feathers are coated with oil. The oxygen levels in the water become depleted, and that kills the fish and anything that depends on the oxygen in the water. On the news, I've heard reports that the people who are trying to work on the cleanup and some of the containment are getting sick with unusual illnesses and things, and that may be a side effect of the oil spill. And we don't know when this is going to be under control or how to get it all cleaned up. And those that are responsible, when they are questioned by our government, they say, well, it's not that big a deal. They're trying to make light of it. They're trying to say, well, it's not as big as it looks. You know, some of the scientists are saying, well, the oil's mixing with the water. They're trying to say, no, it's not mixing with the water. It's all coming to the top. We'll be able to clean it all up. And they're just making excuses. And it's kind of like people do with sin. You know, sometimes they try to say, well, my sin's not that bad, or, you know, I'm trying to clean it up, you know, it's not really affecting anybody else. But if we look around, you know, you can see the effects of the pollution. You can also see the effects of sin. Anywhere you look around us, we're probably all familiar with people who are suffering from the results of their own behavior, things they have decided to do that were sinful. Often it's not only the person that's doing the sin that is in pain or having distress. It can contaminate entire families or whole communities. And if you don't think that sin of one person can affect a whole community, I might mention Adolf Hitler and his sin and the extermination of millions of the Jewish community, or the genocides in different countries in Africa, or the drug killings in Mexico. I was talking with our brother Eli the other day, and he said that he had heard it was like 26,000 people have been killed in Mexico because of these drug killings and stuff. Or the drug addictions and problems that drugs cause in our own neighborhoods, our own areas where we live, and the crime that relates to that. So I'm sure that you can see that point, how one person's sin can contaminate a whole community or a nation. These are large examples, but there are infinite small examples. If a parent or someone who is looked up to teaches by example that sin or wrong behavior is okay, what will the children learn? You have a local full of children here today. What are these kids going to learn from your examples if they're the wrong examples? And not just the children. What do adults learn from other adults? If we have a boss that's involved in illegal behavior and wants us to be involved in that, do we learn that that's okay? Or do we think about what do we know to be righteous behavior and model ourselves that way? We have elected officials who have been caught in adultery or other illegal behavior, and they try to make excuses or just say, oh, it's no big deal, everybody's doing it, it's okay as long as you're not hurting anybody. Well, that's not true. The first scripture that I want to use this morning is in the 13th chapter of Matthew. And the kids are going to like this one because I have a kind of a prop that goes with this. I hope it'll impress them that they will remember this for a long time. In the 13th chapter, the 33rd verse. Now, this is a verse that I used to have a little bit of trouble trying to figure out, how does this really apply? Because it's talking really, it sounds like at first it's just talking about if you're making bread. And, you know, messing with flour and things like that. And this is a parable by Jesus Christ. And it says, another parable he spake unto them. The kingdom of heaven is like unto leaven, which another word for leaven is yeast. And all of you that have baked know that you add yeast to things to make your dough grow. Which a woman took, and she hid in 3 measures of meal till the whole amount of it was leavened or had yeast throughout all of it. And what I would like to show you today, and I don't know if this is going to balance up here good. I think it'll sit there. Y'all know what that is, right? Do you know what that is? Yep. It's not even been opened yet. It's brand new, fresh, clean, clear, pure, good to drink, tastes great. Might not be too cold now. It's been out of the refrigerator for a couple hours. Anybody want to guess what this is? What is it? That's right. And I'm going to take a little bit of this food coloring and I'm going to put it in that water to make an example. Do you have any idea what's going to happen? What? That's right. This is blue. And when I put that drop in there, we're going to kind of watch it. And eventually, it's going to turn blue. So I think I better open the water first, because if I spill it, it won't make quite as big a mess as the food coloring. Set this here for a minute. You probably can't see it right there. Get this where you can see it when I do this. Now we're just going to take a little bit. I'm going to try to do just one drop. I'll try to hold it where you can see it good there. I making a little ring as it goes down in there. And you can see it's kind of floating down through there. Kind of like the oil in the Gulf of Mexico. That color is kind of contaminating the water, isn't it? It's making it look funny. Now let me put the cover back on this food coloring. Set it down here so we don't spill it. I'm going to put the lid back on the water. And see, it's just kind of streaky and yucky looking in there stuff. I'm going to agitate it a little bit. Now, while that's sitting there, I'm going to talk about that a little bit. Because it may seem like a silly example that we just took some water and made it blue. But this scripture is talking about sin. If you put a little bit of sin in something, and the example I want to make, if you put a little bit of sin in you, the whole thing is contaminated. You can't have just a little bit of sin on your finger or in your ear or something like that. When you partake of sin, it contaminates your whole spiritual being. Just like this water bottle is totally blue. The whole thing is blue now. Now, there might be some way that you can get that blue out of there. If you had some really good filters, perhaps. It doesn't want to sit there now. There we go. But the point I want you to think about is just a little bit of sin goes a long ways. A little bit of oil can contaminate an ocean. If you have a whole lot of oil or a whole lot of sin, it contaminates things faster. And I remember when I was a kid, they had ads on TV about pollution and different things. And one of the... It's not going to sit there real good. I'm going to knock it off again. But I may show it to you again once in a while. One of the TV ads, and TV ads are real powerful. They encourage people to do things to spend your money. And some of the people that are advertising do not care if the things that they're trying to sell you are good for you or bad for you, or if they're going to affect your health or not. I remember one of the TV ads, how when I was a kid back in the early 60s, I remember on TV there was always cigarette commercials glorifying smoking cigarettes. And there used to be one that kind of stands out in my mind was when they come out with some extra long cigarettes and people were getting into elevators and getting it caught in the elevator door or something. It's not like they were this long, but a little bit longer than the regular ones. But they were making a big sales pitch just because it was a little bit bigger cigarette. But the one that I liked best was along about 1964, 1965, they decided that they weren't going to allow advertisement for cigarettes on TV anymore. And so then they started making anti-smoking campaigns to encourage people not to smoke. And the one commercial that I really remember was an anti-smoking campaign. It showed a gentleman sitting in a nice area, like if he was sitting out here under one of Eli's trees maybe, and he was having a cigarette. And he had his son with him, about EJ's size, and the man had picked up a cigarette and lit it, and he set the pack down between them. Well, in the commercial, the little boy reaches over and picks up the pack, like he's going to get one out and try it, because Dad's doing it. And the slogan of the ad was, like father, like son. What our kids see us do is what they think is okay. What we see our Father in heaven do, the examples that we have in the Bible and Book of Mormon, those are the things that are okay, the things that Christ taught. There's a scripture in John the 5th chapter, the 19th verse. It really illustrates this point. Then answered Jesus and said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, the Son can do nothing of himself, but what he seeth the Father do. For what things soever he doeth, these also doeth the Son likewise. And I used this sermon at the Michigan reunion. It was Father's Day last Sunday. And so I wanted to kind of make that point, you know, as fathers, do we think about the examples that we have for our children? Do we think about when Jesus Christ looked up to his Father to know what he should do? And that means that we have to look to Christ to know the things that we should do. And it's not just dads, it's moms. Anybody that has influence on anybody is an example. And if your example's bad and people follow it, you're leading them down the wrong path. When we were driving on our way to the Michigan reunion, there was a preacher talking on the radio, and he was talking about the story of the prodigal son, which is in Luke. I think it's the 15th chapter. I'll read part of it here in just a minute. But the point he was making was not as much about the son as he was talking about the father, because Father's Day was coming up. And he was saying what kind of father the man was. And he felt like that he was really a pretty good father. He'd raised his son up in the right ways. And when the son decided he wanted to go his own way, he let him go, because the son wanted to go out and experience the world and see what it's all like. So he let him go. He even gave him some of what he would have inherited if he had waited for his father to die. He got that. And he went and he wasted it. But his father didn't tell him, no, you can't go, or I won't let you go. Because he probably knew that his son would have rebelled and went anyways, whether he had his father's blessings or not. And I'll just read this little section here, and I'll have a few more comments on it as it applies to fatherhood and being a good son. Because this boy wasn't the best at points. In the 15th chapter of Luke, I'm going to start at the 11th verse. And this is Christ telling this story. It's a parable. And he said, A certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. And I don't suppose there's too many fathers nowadays, if their dad come to them and said, Hey, Dad, you know, you're getting older. One of these days you're probably going to go the way all men go. I want my share now. And I don't think there's too many men that would go to the bank and say, Okay, I've got this much here and my house is worth this much. Okay, you can have this portion. It doesn't work that way in our society. But that's what they did here. It's what he did. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And I'm going to say sinful living. He did things that were wrong, that he knew better, that he shouldn't do, and wasted all the money that he got from his dad doing these wrong things. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in the land. And that means food wasn't available. They weren't able to grow their crops. There may not have been enough water, or for some reason they were really short on food. And he began to be in want, or he was hungry. He probably in his lifetime, when he lived at home with his dad, probably never experienced hunger. But when he went out on his own and ran out of money, he experienced hunger. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country. In other words, he got a job. He went to work. And he sent him into his fields to feed the pigs. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. So he was so hungry, he was going to eat the junk that he was feeding the pigs. And nobody offered him food. Nobody was Christian enough to offer him, look at him, say, man, you look hungry, and offer him something to eat. And then he realized, when he came to himself, he said, how many hired servants of my father have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and I am no more worthy to be called thy son. Now, how many times have we maybe gotten into some sinful behavior and we felt that way, that maybe God, maybe we didn't feel worthy to be called his children? But like this father here, he loves us. He just wants us to come back to serve him. But the father said to his servants, bring forth the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. Now his elder son, the one that didn't go away, that stayed at home, was in the field. And he came and drew near to the house and heard music and dancing. And he called one of the servants and asked what those things meant. And he said unto him, thy brother is come, and thy father hath killed the fatted calf, because he hath received him safe and sound. And he was angry, and he would not go in. Therefore came his father out and entreated him. And answering said to his father, lo, these many years I do serve thee, neither transgressed I at any time thy commandment, and yet thou never gavest me a kid that I might make merry with my friends. But as soon as this thy son, now he's talking about his own brother, as soon as this thy son was come, which hath devoured thy living with harlots, thou hast killed for him the fatted calf. Now the dad's talking again. He says unto him, son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. It is meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. That son became destitute because he made bad choices. He became a sinner. But when he returned, when he realized the wrong he had done and returned to his father accepted him with open arms and rejoicing. And I think Jesus is just waiting. If we've slipped away, got on the wrong path, he's ready and willing to welcome us back to his fold. The other thing I want you to think about, are we jealous in our lives of those that we think might be getting a better break, or people that had bad behavior that we think should be punished, but yet it doesn't seem like they are, like they're welcomed home sometimes? If you've had somebody maybe in your family that went off and did bad things and came home, and you thought maybe they should get in trouble with mom or dad or whatever. But with righteousness, when you come back, God welcomes you. He's pleased. He's happy when you come back and are ready to serve him and to be righteous. And another example I remember from being a kid and watching TV was a commercial about pollution again. And some of you may be old enough to remember this commercial. It shows a Native American man observing an area that's just covered with trash. There's litter and junk everywhere along this stream. And it doesn't have any words, any music. It just shows this man with one tear sliding down his cheek. And when I think about that commercial, I wonder, could we make the same commercial with Jesus standing, looking over the world, full of sin and pollution, with a tear sliding down his cheek, thinking, boy, they've really made a mess of things. You know, we have every opportunity given to us to do right or to do wrong. It's our choice. If the people saw a TV commercial with Jesus with a tear running down his cheek when he's looking at all the sin in the world, would most people understand it? Maybe not. I would hope that any of us would, that we would understand that representation. Because I'm sure that when he looks down on the world, he feels a lot of pain. Because there's an awful lot of sin and stuff going on that he sees. I remember about 40 years ago, when I was a kid, my family took an old school bus and made it into a camper and drove from Wisconsin to Michigan to a Michigan reunion. Probably in about 1968, maybe 1969. And I remember stopping several times along the way when we got close to Lake Michigan because we had never seen it before, or at least I had never. And it was so huge. But at that time in the late 60s, the shores were pretty dirty. It smelled bad. And it made me sad that you had something that beautiful, but when you got up close, it didn't smell good, and the shoreline was dirty. And it's kind of like sin. Sometimes from a distance, if you don't see it real clearly, it looks appealing. Like maybe it's something that you want to go jump in and go swimming in it. But when you get there, it's nasty, and you don't want any part of it, or you shouldn't. And then after the reunion, we stayed for a few days, and there was one of the families there that took us out to one of the lakes. It's called Glen Lake, and it's a great big lake. It's spring-fed. The water bubbles up through the beaches along the shore. But that lake was so clean and so clear, about like this bottle of water was before I put the food coloring in it. And that's kind of the way it is with sin and righteousness. One will make you feel sad or ill, and the other, like going to Glen Lake, gives you joy and contentment because it just felt right to be there. You felt like you could jump in the water and swim around. You might get cold, but it wasn't going to make you nasty or filthy with the pollution and stuff that was in it. And while we were on our way from that area, because when Janine and I came from Missouri, we went through Minnesota and through Canada and into Michigan. And before we got to the Michigan reunion, we went to the Bear Sand Dunes, which is right next to Glen Lake. And we camped there for a night, and we toured around, and Janine climbed up to the top of the dunes and looked around. I wasn't able to do that because of my knees and problems. But one of the things, as we were reading some of the little signs and stuff around there that we learned, is that the sand in the dunes gets blown around by the wind. And it just blows it around, and sometimes it even changes the shapes of the dunes. And deserts are like that. If you have just a whole lot of sand with nothing growing on it to hold it in place, the wind just blows it around. And we may be like that. If we don't have a foundation, or if our foundation is weak, We can get blown around and have our courses changed by the winds and influences that are around us. Now, earlier in that week, before we got to that point, we had driven across Canada along Lake Superior on the North Shore. And it seems like almost everywhere that you went there, except the beaches, is granite rock. There's big rocks and little rocks, but everywhere it's granite. It's solid ground. And it looks like when they made the roads, they had to use a lot of dynamite and blasting powder and heavy equipment, and it was a hard job that they had to do to make those roads. But those granite mountains have stood there for a long time. They're resistant to the forces around them. It takes a lot to move a mountain. Is our faith resistant? Are we like those granite mountains? Or are we weak like sand? Do we get blown around? Or are we anchored on a rock that will not move? We have a song like that that we sing sometimes. And we had some real good testimonies while we were traveling. One in particular, we had just got off of the freeway at Big Rapids, Michigan, which is about an hour or two away from the Bradley local. And we just got off the freeway, turned down the main road. We were going to drive into town and get some lunch. And here come a police car with his lights and sirens going. And just a couple minutes later, we seen an ambulance and then fire trucks and all this stuff. So I figured, man, there must have been an accident somewhere in the area. Must have been something bad happened. And so we went in, we ate our lunch, and when we come back out, about a block from the freeway, the place we had just driven through, there had been a really bad accident. I mean, by this time, the wreckers were there picking up the pieces, but somebody probably got hurt. And when I got to thinking, I was like, we just came through there. We were about a half a mile away when we met the police cars. So it could have only happened a few seconds after we were there. And there's often times when God blesses us and we don't know it. There's often times when we are protected from things and we don't realize it. Just like that accident, you know, if we had gone on the other way instead of going back and gotten on the freeway in the same spot, we wouldn't have known that accident happened and we just missed it. By the grace of God, we weren't in it. I'm proud to give that testimony. Another one that's probably more common in Michigan than here, but we saw more than a dozen deer just driving around Michigan along the highways and stuff. And in Missouri, we have lots of deer and they're always getting hit on the roads. And seems like you can't hit a deer without really messing up your car. And so with as many deer as we've seen, I'm thankful we didn't hit one. And when we were part of the road in Canada one evening, we saw a great big moose on the side of the road. And I really wanted to stop and get a picture of him. But he was only about 10 feet away from the road. My truck is bright red. And I thought, that might agitate him a little bit. And I didn't want a moose charging my truck. So we just kind of slowed down a little bit and looked at him and drove on. Another message that we get from advertising that applies to my sermon also is, you know, we've always heard this message, you are what you eat. So probably I should be a burrito or a cheeseburger or maybe some French fries because those are some of my favorite foods. But seriously, the things that we put in our minds and in our bodies have related responses. There's an old saying for people that work with computers. It's called garbage in equals garbage out. If you put in bad programming, you get bad responses. It's the same thing with our minds. If we fill our minds with junk, junk is what comes out. You can't shine the light of Jesus Christ if you're focused on or involved with dark behaviors. Now, in the 6th chapter of Matthew, starting at the 19th verse. I'm just going to read through the 24th. Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. The light of the body is the eye. If therefore thy eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. But if thine eye be evil, thy whole body shall be full of darkness. If therefore the light that is in thee be darkness, how great is that darkness? No man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else will hold to the one and despise the other. Ye cannot serve God and mammon. Now go over to the 12th chapter of Matthew, starting at the 34th verse. I'm going to read through 37. O generation of vipers, how can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. But I say unto you that every idle word that men shall speak, they shall give account thereof in the day of judgment. For by thy words thou shalt be justified, and by thy words thou shalt be condemned. And there are some people that have, they kind of go along this saying that you've probably heard it up here, I'm sure, that what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And what they appear to be saying with that is, if you go out and do some behaviors that you shouldn't do, but nobody sees you, that it's okay. But it doesn't work that way. If you think about the scriptures, and I don't have a particular one about this, but we know that God sees and looks at everything we do. He knows our thoughts. He knows the desires of our heart, whether we desire to be righteous or if we have desires to be involved in sinful behaviors. So you can't just say that, maybe I'll just do a little bit of sin and nobody will ever see it, because if you were blue like a Smurf, everybody would know it, wouldn't they? We are a product of what we allow to influence our lives, whether it's sin or righteousness. We have to make decisions whether we're going to pollute our lives or if we're going to keep them clean. In Matthew, I want to back up to the 7th chapter, and I'm going to read 13 through 27. Enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction. And many there be which go in thereat, because straight is the gate, and narrow is the way which leadeth to life. And few there be that find it. Beware of false prophets, which come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves. Ye shall know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes of thorns or figs of thistles? Even so, every good tree bringeth forth good fruit, but a corrupt tree bringeth forth evil fruit. A good tree cannot bring forth evil fruit, neither can a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. Every tree that bringeth not forth good fruit is hewn down and cast into fire, the fire. Wherefore, by their fruits ye shall know them. So people, when they look at us, are going to judge us by what they see. If they see us doing good things, they're going to think that we're good people. If people observe you doing bad things, they're going to pretty much think you're bad people. And Christ has to look at us in the same way. Are they doing good things? Are they righteous? Do they desire to serve me? Or are they doing unrighteous things and are serving the devil? And then it goes on. Not every one that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father, which is in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name cast out devils, and in thy name done many wonderful works? And then will I profess unto them, I never knew ye. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity. Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And every one that heareth these sayings of mine, and doeth them not, shall be likened unto a foolish man, which built his house upon the sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell. And great was the fall of it. And he's using houses as examples here. But what you really need to think about is this is talking about spiritual things. He's not referring just to if you build your house upon sand close to a river that it's going to get washed away in a flood. He's talking about if your soul's salvation is not founded on the rock of Jesus Christ, when Satan's winds blow, you're probably going to go with it. You're going to get washed away in the evil things of the world. If your life is messed up, if you've got problems, difficulties, the gospel of Jesus Christ has the best cleanup plan that's ever been created. And in the third book of Nephi, I'm just going to read a few short scriptures there. In the 12th chapter, page 674. And I think we may have read part of this in Sunday school this morning, or close to it. It's in the 12th chapter, starting at verse 29 through the end of that chapter. And it shall come to pass that whoso repenteth and is baptized in my name shall be filled. And if he endureth to the end, behold, him will I hold guiltless before my Father at that day when I shall stand to judge the world. And he that endureth not unto the end, the same is he that is also hewn down and cast into the fire, from whence they can no more return, because of the justice of the Father. And this is the word which he hath given them unto the children of men. And for this cause he fulfilleth the words which he hath given. And he lieth not, but fulfilleth all his words, and no unclean thing can enter into his kingdom. Therefore, nothing entereth into his rest, save it be those who have washed their garments in my blood, because of their faith and the repentance of all their sins, not just a few of them, all of them, and their faithfulness unto the end. Now this is the commandment. Repent, all ye ends of the earth, and come unto me and be baptized in my name, that ye may be sanctified by the reception of the Holy Ghost, that ye may stand spotless before me at the last day. Verily, verily, I say unto you, this is my gospel, and ye know the things that ye must do in my church. For the works which ye have seen me do, that shall ye also do. For that which ye have seen me do, even that shall ye do. Therefore, if ye do these things, blessed are ye, for ye shall be lifted up at the last day. And I have a short poem that I'm going to read to you that our brother Joe Smith from down in Springfield read to us several months ago, and I really liked it, so I'm going to read it. And we don't know who the author is, and it has the same rhythm as 'Twas the Night Before Christmas, but that's not what it's talking about. And the title of this poem is Wait. Desperately, helplessly, longingly I cried. Quietly, patiently, lovingly, God replied. I pled and I wept for a clue to my fate, and the Master so gently said, Child, you must wait. Wait, you say, wait, my indignant reply. Lord, I need answers, I need to know why. Is your hand shortened, or have you not heard? By faith I have asked, and am claiming your word. My future and all to which I can relate hangs in the balance, and you tell me to wait. I'm needing a yes, a go-ahead sign, or even a no to which I can resign. And Lord, you have promised that if we believe, we need but to ask and we shall receive. And Lord, I've been asking and this is my cry. I'm weary of asking, I need a reply. Then quietly, softly, I learned of my fate as my Master replied, once again, you must wait. So I slumped in my chair, defeated and taut, and grumbled to God, so I'm waiting for what? He seemed then to kneel, and his eyes wept with mine, and he tenderly said, I could give you a sign. I could shake the heavens and darken the sun. I could raise the dead and cause mountains to run. All that you seek, I could give, and pleased you would be. You'd have what you want, but you wouldn't know me. You'd not know the depths of my love for each saint. You'd not know the power that I give to the faint. You'd not learn to see through the clouds of despair. You'd not learn to just trust by knowing I'm there. You'd not know the joy of resting in me when darkness and silence were all you could see. You'd never experience that fullness of love as the peace of my spirit descends like a dove. You'd know that I give and I save for a start, but you'd not know the depth of the beat of my heart, the glow of my comfort late into the night, the faith that I give you when you walk without sight, the depth that's beginning or beyond getting just what you asked of an infinite God who makes what you have last. You'd never know, should your pain quickly flee, what it means that my grace is sufficient for thee. Yes, your dreams for your loved ones would all come true, but oh, the lost, if I lost what I am doing in you. So be silent, my child, and in time you will see that the greatest of gifts is to get to know me. And though oft my answers seem terribly late, my most precious answer of all is still wait. Thank you.